Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening. My name is Carmen Miro, and you're listening again to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. Hi, so this evening, Kara Kuhulain will be joining us to talk about psychic ethics. So before we welcome him, please join me in welcoming my co-presenters tonight. Maureen, hi, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. I like how you call us co-presenters. That's very nice.
I think it's prettier, yes.
It's prettier.
Yes. It seems more artistic somehow, you know?
I don't know. I think I like it. Yes, I do.
Yes. Thank you. Well, tell me a bit about your work, Maureen. I know about your work, but just I would like to know a bit more about your tarot.
Mm-hmm. About my tarots. I like that.
Yeah.
My tarots. It sounds like my dreadlocks.
Everyone has their own style.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm an intuitive, psychic, intuitive empath, as well as I know that you are as well. But that's can be the most struggling of it all, my empathic way. But
no,
I utilize
to be an unfeeling psychic. How wouldn't that be perfect?
Well, but being that, you know, it can be very intense, but I do utilize the tarot as my main tool. I'm self-taught in every way, and I've been professionally doing my work for about 25 years, and I help people with directions. They have choices, and every negative can be a positive. And I also feel that tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. I'm very much clear on that. Yeah. So there you have it. Thank you.
Thanks, Maureen. Thanks. Steve. We have Steve here. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Carmen. I've had a great day and happy to be here for the radio show again.
Thank you. So, Steve, you are. What do you do for your work?
I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer. So I use both that connection with spirit and ability to tune into people that have passed the spirit and seek guidance from the spirit world, whether that's from our loved ones in spirit or our guides. I combine that with the very analytical, mathematical astrology, which is brilliant for very accurately predicting events, timing, and looking at relationship compatibility, and just really, I think, the best way of understanding oneself and the unconscious mind. So I have a lot of fun with that, and I'm available at Psychic Access like you guys.
Yeah, great. And that's our UK Steve. We have US Stephen. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Carmen. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay, thanks. Tell me a bit about yourself.
Well, like my colleague Steve, I also am an astrologer, and I also read tarot cards. I focus on relationships and career issues mostly, and my method is comprised of blending astrology, numerology, and the imagery of the tarot to get a very incisive sort of picture of whatever it is that you're going through at the time.
Yes, and we all seem to have these basic structural foundational techniques to read, and
yes.
Then we add a little twist to them. And I think all of our psychics on this specific channel are definitely somewhat fitting into each other. We all have similar skills, and this is why we are bringing in our new presenter, our new speaker tonight. He's actually not a psychic, but he is a practitioner in our field. His name is Kerr Kuhulain. He's a retired Canadian Mountie. And he's been able to use his training or his past work experience to restructure and enhance principles, basic principles of ethics and magical intent. So tonight, in this fascinating topic, we're going to be looking at the benefits of polite psychic practice, proper and honorable based fighting form, and self-defense. These tenets are applicable to all areas of life, especially psychics and energy workers, and also for anyone else needing empowering in social or difficult work circumstances. So that's what we're going to be bringing in tonight. We're just waiting for Kerr to connect.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, hi, Kerr. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Oh, well, thank you for coming. So, Kerr, we're really excited about your particular work. Kerr himself, he has written a few bodies of work, actually. He has written a lot. But one of those things that he has done is he's got a very interesting work history. Kerr, tell us a bit about yourself. You're in BC right now.
Right. I'm in Seashell, BC.
Which is, for those of you that don't know, it's like the islands north of British
Columbia. Yeah, I'm on the west coast of Canada. So I'm looking down at the ocean through my window right now.
I know. And he really is, because I used to live there and I know what he means. And tell us a bit about yourself, Kerr.
I'm a retired Vancouver police officer, not a Mountie. I was with the municipal police here. 36 years I was involved both as a police officer and a dispatcher. I was the first officer to go public about his Wiccan beliefs and then spent the next 25 years doing anti-defamation work and talking to police agencies and public agencies all over North America, educating them about things pagan and psychic. And I'm the head of the Order of Skaya, which is a registered religious society in the province of British Columbia. It's an order of knights. And so we're active trying to show people how to empower themselves and how to stand up and, by their example, show the world how this could be a better place.
Right. And this is what we found fascinating. One of the reasons I found you as well was because you had an interesting list that you had on the Order of Sky, your website. And one of the things that drew me into your work was the organization and the training or the discipline that you seem to even had in the layout of your books and your web design. Now, you, from what I could see here, you had written a book on the Wiccan self-defense, or at least for law enforcement. How was that received in the law enforcement community? I know that perhaps on the West Coast, were they receptive towards your coming out as such in an unusual religious sense,
spiritual
sense?
When I started in 1977, the police department was basically white males. There were three token female officers, and there was one black male, a one-third generation Japanese-Canadian. That's radically changed now. It's now probably about 16 to 18%. Female and all kinds of different ethnic groups involved. And it makes a big difference. When I started, there was a lot of misunderstanding. There were a lot of people looking askance at me, wondering who I was and how did I dare to be different. Now, there are all kinds of people who are different and different, so, you know, something they're comfortable with. And I think that's probably happened all over North America with police departments. I think it's a good thing. The ethnic and religious diversity has gradually crept in there, and it's made them a lot more receptive to people in a community who are different and has allowed them to serve them better. The book, actually, I think what you're referring to, Wiccan Warrior, Full Contact Magic, they're not really self-defense books. They're about the warrior archetype. And helping people understand what warrior is. It isn't about using your hands, it's about using your head. It isn't about fighting, it's about being effective. So it's about basically taking charge of your life, finding your power and using it in the world.
Whatever the definition of power is, which is, does that some of your work entail that as well, is helping a person discern what kind of power would be beneficial to them? You know, you would always think in terms of someone needing to be aggressive to assert power, but that it need not necessarily be true. Is that correct?
No. Basic Sun Tzu, the best general is the one who wins without fighting, without engaging. It's right. A peaceful tradition. It's not about aggression at all.
I'm sorry, from what order is where was that from? Is that a Japanese or?
Sun Tzu is a 13th century Chinese philosopher. And we've got a lot of influence within our order from Bushido, from philosophers like Miyamoto Musashi from the 16th century. It's all about doing a fearless inventory of everything you are and learning how to use it. You know, I don't think anybody out there has weaknesses, really. Often if I ask people to define themselves, they'll hand me two lists, one strengths, one weaknesses. I tell them, put that away, start again. I want characteristics, because everything you have is useful. You know, if you're stubborn, that could be a problem in some situations, but in other situations, it could be just what you need to get across the finish line. Everything you have is useful. Everything has a use. It's all the context that you use it in that makes it powerful or not.
And this is fascinating. This is one of the reasons why I helped bring Kerr in here, because a lot of us psychics have a tremendous amount of energy and personal power and ego. And it's hard because many of us have not been trained in what power management is. Many of us are very talented, but because of the amount of abuse and discrimination we are faced with, we tend to have to either wield our power in different ways or display ourselves more, or perhaps we go into ourselves and isolate more and we become, you know, more and more introvert. Kerr, I have some questions for you for sure on these issues. One of the things I wanted to start with is you have a rule list, which is quite interesting. For those of you that may want to check out his website, which is kerkuhulain.com. That's on our site, on our website. You can please check the link there for the spelling. He has 11 tenets or 11 rules. Could you explain to me where you got your rules from? And there's a couple of interesting ones I want to point out.
Well, actually, the order has two lists. One is a list of 13 precepts that you use to order your life and take charge of your life. And the other is a list of 13 principles of chivalry, which the two complement each other. So you can have one for each month of the year and then one left over for the year itself. The principal one, the one we start with in our precepts, is know thyself. And of course, that goes right back to the Delphic Oracle. That's basically your toolkit. Turning inwards and doing an inventory of everything you are, that's where your power starts from. My fellow author, Wiccan author, Amber Kay, once wrote in Real Magic, or True Magic, once you've told the world you're powerful, you can no longer be a victim. You know, it's not that some of the people are my fellow knights in the order weren't victims at one time, but they don't see themselves that way anymore because they've taken charge of their life. You can let yourself be blown through life, let the currents all around you drive you along, take you where they will. And that's something that people who are psychic definitely have a strong feeling for, because that's one of the things you're doing is looking out there to see which way these currents are taking you. But this is a matter of saying, you know what, I'm the captain of the ship, I can grab the tiller, I can steer. And so now that you're using that psychic ability to look ahead, to foresee, to determine what's ahead and where you need to go, and you start taking a direction, that's partially what taking control of your power is about.
Okay, so it's actually forming an opinion, and would you agree that that would mean research and self-education? Or can this be for the person that doesn't have access to?
Absolutely. It's a matter of, I mean, this is the meditative step. It's turning inwards. It's one of the things that a lot of people in ancient Japanese, Chinese martial arts, this is what attracts them to it. It isn't the fact that they want to fight. It's the fact that they want to learn about themselves. They want to discover themselves. They want to get self-confidence. They want to understand how to use what they have. And it isn't just about physical stuff. It's about using the mind. There is an expression in Japanese martial arts, mind like the moon, mind like water. It's a matter of opening up and improving your perception and seeing the world the way it really is, using all six of your senses, you know. It's about, there was a fellow author, Wicked Warrior, that I used to hang out with many years ago, Paul Tweedy, and he once said, warriors, soldiers march, warriors dance. And that's basically it. When you're engaged with somebody, you're not thinking, you're not being logical. You have completely opened up your mind to awareness, and you are dancing. You are dancing down that knife edge, maintaining your balance.
And for those of you that don't, that are, we have to remember to get people, remind them about what the idea of being a warrior is. Because one of the most, some very good YouTube videos that you have, they really do delineate, he has these weekly or daily updates, they're phenomenal. It does actually outline, in a sense, how you cannot be held captive by your own anger, and what actually makes a knight. Okay, let's say the term of a knight. And let's define that, because there's a couple of things I wanted to go into. One is the definition of an order. You call it the knighthood. And one would imagine that a knight may elect not to go into battle. To me, on a chessboard, it's a strategic adjunctive. It has to be used at some point. But it's usually in order to further a game. What, in terms of, like, you had the structure of a pawn, you have a structure of a knave, you know, would you be able to give us a bit of background, please, about
sure.
what the order of a knight is? And can they be actually equal to a king? Because possibly they just didn't elect to become one.
I tell people I don't want followers, and I don't. That implies that people are drawing power from me. What I want is brothers and sisters who stand shoulder to shoulder with me. And basically, what this is all about is simply this. Master yourself, everything else takes care of itself, seriously. So this is about achieving self-mastery. And we have three levels of initiation. Basically, you come in as a novice. You do that inventory. You discover about yourself. You discover how your chi, how your energy, your life energy works, how your psychic abilities manifest themselves, because everyone is different. Once you've got that, you become a squire. Now you start working on now that I know about this stuff, how do I use it? How can I actually take this and use it in the world to order my life and get things done? Once you've mastered that, you become a knight. So basically, you've removed yourself from the world to follow this warrior path. You've got to a point where you're now learning you've learned how to use this stuff. The last phase, mastery, is turning around and going back into the world and helping other people do this. And that's the last level. The one that I want is the master. So it's leaving the world, learning about yourself, and returning to it. It's a circular journey. It takes you all the way around. But at the essence of it is it's self-mastery. You know, that's basically what it's about. It's owning your, taking responsibility. It's not using any of this guilt that you see so many people obsessed with within the modern Western world. You know, but I don't do guilt. I do responsibility. You know, we don't thou shalt not. We do I will not. It's
right, which
quite different.
Really
it means you have
here.
To take a very close look at what you're doing and own it. There's a thing within the Wiccan religion that I come from called the Wiccan Rede, and it says, "And it harm none, do what thou wilt." And the first part, harm none, I mean, that is pretty obvious. You're trying to take responsibility for your actions, and if something you do affects somebody, you own it, you fix it. But that second half of this double-edged sword is be all you can be, reach for the stars, carpe diem. It's saying you have power, use it. And so the two, the power and the responsibility, go hand in hand.
What would you say for those people who are like big brothers of children or big sisters and that they're, you know, thrust into a role of being an example or a knight or a responsibility maker. How would you characterize the life of the unwilling, perhaps, participant or practitioner? Some of us psychics have definitely probably never elected to become in any way to embrace our work. Yes, you were saying, you know.
Yeah, no, I see where you're going with this. And I've run into this many times. The person who has suddenly discovered they have psychic ability and they're not sure that they never really asked for this. It's just something was thrust upon them. You know, it's a funny thing, spending all those years as a police officer and surrounded by officers who have to pay very close attention to what's going on around them. And like it or not, that will enhance their psychic ability as well. And
good
you hear
point,
them talk about
point.
Punches
yeah.
and gut feelings and instincts, but they'd rather, you know, shoot themselves than admit that they have any psychic ability. Everyone has psychic ability.
Let's wow, most of us never
there.
Thought
there's
about
a,
that. Like, I know
there's
that there
an
are
experiment
some...
that I've been doing with classes all over North America. I've been doing it for years. What I do is I go walk into a group and I say, okay, who here doesn't think they've got any psychic ability? If I had a thought in my head, if I was focusing on an object, you wouldn't be able to tell me what it is. And you'll generally get some people putting their hand up, and I will choose one of them. I will sit them down and then we'll say, I've got a bag over here on the table. There's something in it. I'm focusing on that thing that's in that bag. And all I want you to do is close your eyes. Now I've taken away 70% of your perception right there. So I'm forcing you to pay attention to the other five senses. And what I will simply do is say, okay, start focusing on all the different things you can hear. Then we'll focus on the things you can smell. Then we'll focus on the things you can feel, you know, the wind in your face or, you know, the feet on the floor, all the different things, all of those other senses. And eventually I will get to that last one. I will say, all right, I want you to just... I don't want you to think. I want you to say the first color that comes in your head. And so they will give me a color. So give me the first shape. Give me the first texture. You know, what does this thing feel like? Nobody has ever failed. You go reach in that bag. It's the color. It's the shape. It's the texture every single time. And it's really quite simple. It's not because I have immense psychic power and I'm putting this into their head so they couldn't possibly not see it. What I'm allowing them to do is to take it apart. It's one thing to look at this other space, this other reality out there. It's another thing to understand it. You know, we're generally, a lot of us, very talented within the psychic community, getting people to connect with alternate realities, alternate mind sets. We're not necessarily, some of us, very good at helping people understand what they see there. It's kind of like picking up a book for the first time. You see all of these meaningless symbols until someone comes along and says, well, these are letters, and they have sounds, and if we put them together, they form a combined sound. It's a word. It has a meaning. And we collect them, and we have sentences. And now, eventually, when we open that book, we can see a world of meaning in front of us. It's the same sort of thing. If you take the thing into pieces, it makes it easier to see, and you can eventually get used to using those pieces, putting them together, get better and better at seeing in one way or another. It could manifest as clairvoyance or clairaudience or however it works for you, but everybody has psychic ability, everybody. There was a famous experiment that was done in the United Kingdom decades ago where they took children 5 to 8 years of age. Half of them they put in a room with senior cards with symbols on them that they use for testing psychic ability. Other half were in the other room with a pad of paper and a pencil. And they said, draw on the paper what you think the other person in the other room is looking at. 85% got it on the first attempt. But then if you got somebody my age, and I'm 59, and said, okay, let's do this, you'd be lucky to get 49% because people have been telling you for years and years and years, you can't do this. It doesn't happen. It's not true. We all have this ability. So the thing is, I mean, if you've got a natural bent to this, if you have this running over top of you and giving you stuff that you don't understand, that you don't necessarily want to see, this is why you need to develop the power. Because what you need to do is be able to turn down the volume. You need to be able to turn it on when you want to see it and shut it off when you don't. And
I would agree with you. I think that that does take a tremendous amount of self-discipline in other areas of your life. I think a lot of people approach it and they tend to approach it purely mystically, purely training themselves in spiritual or divination techniques, and they forget about basic practice, like the samurai. Basic practice for the samurai was to stay clean, orderly, wake up at a certain time, dress in a certain way, remain quiet. If you read the Hagakure, I don't know if you've had a chance to read that, but the way of the samurai is very, very particular. And you really do have to follow a tremendous amount of discipline, even to the point of forsaking love. Most people are not prepared to do that. They don't willingly forsake that. They equate power with love, right?
Yeah, I think basically that is coming from a Confucian, a Zen perspective. And basically for the warrior, what you're trying to do is, if you want to lose something, get angry. You spoke of anger earlier. It clouds your perception. You know, any kind of emotion is going to cloud your perception. You want to completely shut that down. It's called no mind. You want to basically focus on what's happening and respond to it. So I don't think that the average person needs to shut love out of their life necessarily. But if you're going to be doing psychic work, you certainly need to be able to separate yourself from the emotion. It's especially important when you're trying to do something for somebody that's really wrapped up in their emotions and emotionally distraught. You don't want to necessarily get caught up in that. It'll cloud what you're trying to see, you know?
I think they were just exceptional in that sense, and it was usually a very small paid elite army, right? Of course, most larger scale armies would have families and such, and those people would need also some form of training, discipline, or empowerment. And this is where I'm going into some of the questions. A few of them that I wanted to ask was, you know, if there is a balance between life actions and magic. Let's say you don't want to believe in magic, and you just want to be able to harness your power, right? Would make sense that somebody would say, perhaps a ritual, even a Christian ritual, would maybe equate to one of, you know, a spell, say. Or if you're not spiritual at all, going to the gym and doing a really good workout and at least repeating a word over and over, or listening to a good song that you like over and over again, would harness that same energy. Or is this very different?
Well, there is a connection that was made back in the 1800s and in a lot of ceremonial magic. The idea was, if we're going to do magic, we have to do a ritual. Ritual is a very important, powerful tool. It helps mark important passages in our life. It creates initiatory experiences that can completely transform us. It helps us see the mysteries of ourselves and the world around us. But you don't have to do ritual to do magic. Magic, I can define it in three words. Energy follows intent. Let me say that again. Energy follows intent. That's it.
So you could basically make something change by going for a bike ride. What would you define as intent? Most people would think it's wizardry and big, you know,
no.
statements and such.
No, well, I mean, if you go back to the ancient Chaldean magic, the idea was that it's kind of this Newtonian universe, and you need to use the right word to pull the right lever to get everything to work. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it is. From my standpoint, this is more of a quantum thing. You know, there is a unified field connecting everything. Everything is connected to everything else. And all you need to do basically is find the right line of force and just use the slightest amount of intent, energy in that direction, and things start to fall down like dominoes. There's a website the people listening to the show tonight can check out. It's called the Intention Experiment. Go Google that. And the whole purpose of the thing is for people to, on a monthly basis, choose a certain thing that they want to alter and get as many people as possible at the same time to focus on that intent. And they choose things that they can then measure the experiment.
I know, I've seen that. Hey,
what kind of a result they can get. Check that out, because, I mean, that's precisely what I'm talking about. I used to freak out my fellow dispatchers in the beginning, because you go in there and it would be an extremely busy night. Here's the four different channels, and it's Friday night, and it's all crazy. And the person you're relieving at the beginning of the night shift is saying, are you sure you want to sit down here? It's just completely a gong show. And you say, okay, yeah, no problem. You sit down, and there's channel one, and it's going up in flames. And there's channel two, and it's just crazy. And there's channel three, and, you know, it's completely out of control. And here's me. I've been sitting there for 45 minutes, and the screen is flat. And you go, what are you doing? How did you do that? It's intent. You put that calming intent out there, it will level it out. It'll make it work. You have that power. You can do this. That's magic. I'm not saying special words. I'm not waving a magic wand. I'll tell you about magic wands. If I stopped the average person in the street of North America and said, what's a magic wand? He'd say, oh, it's a stick. It's got a star in the end of it. You wave it around, you know, bippity-boppity-boo, swish and flick. If you went to somebody in mainland China who was doing Tai Chi or Zhanzhang or something, and you said, show me your magic wand, they'd take the thumb, they'd fold it over their little finger and the next finger, and they'd point with the other two fingers. That's a wand to them for directing Qi. You don't need anything to do magic other than what you came into the world with. And it's as simple as energy follows intent. If you learn how to sense your energy, you learn how to focus your intent. That's that mental discipline you were talking about. And the sky's the limit. It's amazing what you can do with it.
I know. And then I've seen that. They say that's for the home crowd advantage, and that they were actually able to measure differences in certain numbers that the crowd was able to spike. And they've done this experiment many, many times.
Yeah.
They have been proven through random number generators. You guys can go and do it yourselves. Just Google random number generators.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun and watch your ideas transform.
Famous experiment, yes.
So in other words, that can leave us open to, you know, what I've thought are, you know, problems like computer errors. You know, if you want to go into magic, going into computer telemetry and all of such things, I would find it quite interesting to do an experiment on that. But for the purposes of intent, because, I mean, you're going to get a lot of people now with the internet with a tremendous amount of frustration, probably locked indoors, unable to, you know, go out, get out, or they're locked into their computer. They're going to be focusing intent, right? So for these people, because I imagine that we're all stuck in this right now. We're stuck on all of our gadgets and devices. What I would love to look at today are the ideas of what people are having problems with right now, which is, like, you know, online fighting, online, you know, if you have a situation where, as an empath here, you know, I know when someone's vibing bad vibes to me. My empathic technique is to pretty much sense the child-like essence in them, bring them back to a more diminutive age that I can probably relate to on a friendlier basis, and relate to them as an 8-year-old, and not as a condescending 8-year-old, but just what the inner child is. That's some of the techniques I have. But I wanted to ask you, you must be coming across a lot of people in your order that come in that probably want, that still have traces of being, say, you know, gossips, or they have bitterness, or they have one-upmanship, brinkmanship, or, you know, they want to take it on to sort of their own personal ascension level because they were taught that to be strong, you had to be aggressive or defensive, right?
Right.
What do you do with people like that?
First rule of magic, you create your own reality. That's where it starts. If you don't like the reality that's happening around you, don't look at other people or other causes. Look at yourself first, because you're probably causing it. And you have the power to change it. You can make that reality quite different. And it's ridiculously simple to do, really. But that's basically where you have to start. I mean, and what you do is not necessarily going to work for everybody, because everybody has their own way of doing things. One of the people that I am very influenced by, and I mentioned this earlier, was Miyamoto Musashi. He wrote a book called The Book of Five Rings. He was a samurai warrior, was never defeated, and he eventually went and became a monk, meditated for 10 years, and then ultimately wrote this book to explain how he had achieved this.
Yeah.
And his most important precept, and he had 9 precepts that he worked with, was called diligently follow the path of two swords as one. And what he meant by that was samurais had two swords. One was long, one was short. In a given situation, you're faced with an attack. You'd have to decide which of these two swords you're supposed to use. Now, people have been telling him for years, you're doing it wrong. You're untraditional. You can't do it that way. And the reason they were telling him that was because this sword is designed to be held by two hands. All katana are meant to be that way. Well, he figured, I got two hands, I got two swords, I'm going to put one in each. And people said, you can't do that. But he was never defeated because he found a different way of doing it. This is the point of the whole thing. Don't do something because everyone else is doing it. Do it because it works. If it works, keep it. If it doesn't, bin it. It's as simple as that.
Which means when it comes to at least engaging in something, you can be creative. You don't have to follow a group of people, and you probably make it work for yourself. Oh, and we are going to just quickly cut to a commercial, curve. We will be right back, and we will finish and definitely or continue with this conversation. It's fascinating. One moment, please.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Hi, Kara. We're back. Okay. So, you know, you were saying about being able to come in and adjust one's styles for at least approaching something that's being flexible. When you're looking at a situation where you are being, say, victimized, the word victim would put you into such a passive role. Is a passive FS seen as weak? For those people that are conscientious objectors or people that simply want to peacefully believe in something, why are they seen as weak?
I don't think that many people understand exactly what real power looks like. And if you want to see an example of an exceptional warrior, you know, look at Gandhi. You couldn't ask for somebody more peaceful than that, but very strong and he got things done and very assertive, but not aggressive. You know, warrior isn't about fighting. It's about being effective. Again, it's not about using your hands. It's about using your head. It's about taking charge and making things happen. And this doesn't necessarily mean that you are overpowering somebody. It means finding ways to link your power with other people and do stuff together.
So how do you mentally prepare or stand down if you're on the defensive? Or when do you decide to make an offensive move when you're in a situation?
Well, that's part of what you're doing when you're looking at a situation. You're trying to nurture the ability to perceive the truth in all matters. That's one of our precepts. You want to try and get a clear picture of what's going, and you want to try to sense what direction the energy is going, and you need to try to redirect it. There's an old adage in martial arts: when they push, you pull. When they pull, you push. You use the energy that's coming at you or being drawn from you. You don't have to use your own force. You can use the stuff that's around you. I have people that often write to me and say, you know, I need to defend myself from psychic attacks. No, you don't. What you need to do is get a sense of how to work with energy, and you need to swim. You need to find the currents and you know, divert the ones you don't want and grab onto the ones you do.
Well, that's what they call leading from behind, I believe. That's what they've stated that term is. Is being able to gather energy around you and let it build on the momentum around you. Specifically, when you're under threat, would it be worthwhile even paying attention to a threat, let's say magically, okay? And was that a way of diffusing it? Or do you have to always concentrate your power and go, I'm under threat, now I better concentrate my ball of power that way?
if somebody's like a wave sending something negative at me, I'm just going to divert it and ground it out. Eventually, they're going to realize it's not having any effect, and they're going to throw up their hands and give up on it. If they're trying to pull something from me, well, okay, then I'm going to let you have a tsunami. You can have all the energy you want. You know, you're going to find out that you've taken on too much, and you'll give it up pretty quickly. I mean, it's not a matter of trying to be aggressive. If you are standing there and you are confident, people can tell that. The number of times I avoided conflicts when I was a police officer simply by standing there and making it very evident that I had this power, people just sort of put up their hands and say, okay, I don't even want a piece of this. I'm not going there. People can tell. You know, even
I know.
Everyone has that psychic ability, right? So,
in a way, does that make you popular? I mean, I would imagine everybody would think of the Knight, you know, Mr. Popular Guy. But, I mean, Mr. Popular Guy has to make some pretty bold decisions, may have to stand away from the crowd.
Leadership isn't necessarily about being the popular guy.
Exactly,
it's about doing the right thing. And you know, it's a matter of realizing that you have strength and realizing that you have, you know, developing your confidence so that you can use it. And again, master yourself, everything takes care of itself. Once you've achieved that, you'll find synchronicity coming into play. Everything starts working. You start moving down the path and everything starts to click. If things aren't, then that's an indication that something is out of balance and you need to reassess and get back into that space, return to that position of strength. So
that is very
it's an ongoing process.
That's even just, we teach our clients that it's a matter of going or feeling the flow of energy, the fields around you.
Exactly.
Tell me something. Do you know, is there such a thing as a friendly fight, like sparring? And how would you know the difference in when it crosses over into something a little more negative?
Oh, I mean, if you have people who are listening to us right now who are martial artists, they'll understand there is such a thing. I mean, kumite in Japanese martial arts like Aikido or karate is judo. It's two people entering the ring, bowing to each other in respect, engaging, you know, one's going to go down ultimately and the one standing is going to win that. And then they're going to get up, they're going to bow to each other, and going to recognize that they have learned something, both of them. You know, if you put on a black belt, basically what you're saying to the world is, hey, I'm ready, test me. It's one of the things that the Knights and Masters of our order have discovered very quickly is once you have stood up and said, all right, I have mastery, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be tested anymore. It doesn't mean that there aren't conflicts and battles you may need to face.
Yes, good point. So when you become a knight, there's it's forever. I mean, you have to continue to fight.
Oh, yeah, it's a major commitment. But it does mean that you're prepared to face this stuff and you're prepared to deal with it. You know, every single initiation ritual that we have ever done in the order ends with the words, now go forth into the world and run straight at whatever you fear the most. One of our precepts is who dares wins. That's basically it. You need to be willing to fail. You know? Failure isn't a bad thing. Failure is an opportunity to learn and keep moving. Most of the people who are extremely successful in this world got there by failing over and over again. You know,
that's correct. I mean, one of the questions I have about that is, when you have a dare, doesn't that mean that the people will constantly be causing flux or trouble to get more wins? Tell us about the idea of a bad dare or a bad bid.
To dare isn't necessarily challenge another person. To dare is to permit yourself to take that leap into the unknown and try something that you haven't done before, to try and push the envelope out, extend your abilities beyond what you were able to do in the past. It isn't necessarily about knocking heads with somebody else. It's about daring yourself. It's challenging yourself is what it is. You know,
I would imagine that some people would try and
the mountaineer fight, climbing right? Mount Everest. He's not going after a person. He's going after himself. You know.
So I think for our readers, we need, or our clients here, we really need to know the difference between the idea of fighting, not being fighting other people, but really the inner conflict, the conflict between ourselves and the cosmos, really, which is in the end what you're going to be left to battle with. You know, after everything is said and done, when all the humans are gone, you're left out there in the structural matter of the cosmos, and you're going to have to face the material order at some point once you have decided to run away or not from the human order. You've ran a martial arts training academy, is that correct? Or are you a training academy for?
I've taught martial arts, yes, but okay. I mean, not at the moment, but yes, I have taught.
Okay, and were you familiar with any of the one of the attack formations that I find most fascinating? It's one of the more powerful ones. It's called the ox. That's in the buffalo, or you know, if that is a traditional Japanese stalemate position, where you get say two sides or four sides that are squared off in a position that are unable to move. How would you psychically diffuse something like this, where you would have a large group of people perhaps trying to? Both, all sides having correct opinions, trying to move something ahead, but all correct opinions outweighing each other, or basically to the point that there is no movement. How does one break that? Does one break that?
I think you do. I think you do it by making people understand that they're all looking at the same thing. You put 10 different people in a field, they all witness the same event. One's going to see Jesus, one's going to see Mary, one's going to see Urzuli, one's going to see Gaia, one's going to see a UFO, and at least one of them is going to be looking at everyone else going, what are you all looking at? You know, I mean, we're all looking at the same thing. But because we come from different social, cultural, educational backgrounds, we perceive something different. You get a stalemate situation like that, it's because everyone's locked into one perception. So what you need to do is use that ability of yours, that ability to perceive the truth, to look beyond the obvious, to find ways to make them expand their ability to see themselves and the world around them and start to perceive things in a different light.
Is that a feeling that you imbue in your fellow sparrees or your friends? Because I usually, when I try and deal with groups, I do emanate, or I do exude, I can't help it, a lot of compassion. Even though I may sound strong, I tend to not, you know, hold on to any anger. I express it then and there. I be done with it, and then I move on. I do not hold any grudges. But for those of us that do hold grudges, that are unable to move beyond certain points, what are the points that we can sense there's any breaks, and how do we use those points as leverage?
Well, you just right there given me an example of using your energy and your intent. You know, you were doing magic there. You put your compassion out there to help other people become compassionate too. But I mean, again, this is a matter of if they push, you pull. You pull, you push. It's not a matter of finding some sort of force to overwhelm them. It's finding where their force is going and directing it, you know?
So finding a common ground would be a good idea. And there's no special meditation, or for those people out there that are not practicing, that are in this every day, what would be their focus?
Well, you know, it's funny. Meditation, again, when I was starting down this path 44 years ago, people told me meditation was sitting down, hopefully in a lotus posture, and staring at like a candle flame or a mandala or something. And that isn't necessarily so for everybody. There are all kinds of different ways to meditate. And frankly, I find it easier to meditate in motion, doing, you know, Sinawali with my Eskrima sticks or whatever. But the whole idea of meditation is to open your mind to sense all of those currents around you, to connect with them, so that you get a sense of where they're coming from, what direction they're going in, and which ones you need to pay attention to.
I would imagine you would have been a very good negotiator. You know, for those of you that don't know a bit about Kerr's background, he was a hostage negotiator in Vancouver when I was living there. Goodness, Kerr, what was going on? And we
you get all kinds of people running around with weapons and they barricade themselves, and the best way to deal with something like that is basically to use the sort of stuff I've just been talking about and get them to put the thing down and start seeing things in a different way and calm down. And, you know, sometimes if they're high on drugs, it takes a while because you have to wait for that influence of the drugs to wear down, but you can get there. You know, it's not a matter of trying to do everything with force. It's a matter of trying to do things by redirecting it.
I mean, you must have bonded then with some of the people that you must have helped. I mean, and that's what we tend to do.
I spent 9 years in mental health emergency services, me and a psych nurse going around dealing with people who are mentally disordered, and it gave you all kinds of interesting perspectives on how people's minds can work.
And also but, you worked on the gang crime unit, is that correct? That's amazing.
I was in the gang crime unit. I was the emergency response team. I did a lot of crazy, scary things.
Yeah, but you survived, and you were able to master that and come out with a tremendous amount of passion.
I made it through a career without ever having to shoot anyone. I'd been shot at, but I was able to, you know, people attacked me on 3 occasions with knives, and I stopped them with my 2 hands. You know, that's part of the reason you do this training and this discipline.
What did you do?
You control other people's force, you know?
When you're presented in that situation, because here in Toronto, lots of aggressive people everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
What do? Do you look away? Do you smile? Do you look them in the eye? Do you generally? I project I do what I call almost like a foot stomp. I sort of like just project like almost like a thunderbolt into the ground, and that tends to clear the area around me.
Uh-huh.
I find that's a very powerful way to diffuse some of that. People will step back for about at least
definitely
6 to 8 putting feet, right?
The sign up saying don't try this, don't test me. But what it comes down to, however this works for the individual, it's a matter of being able to display confidence. Somebody out there who's looking for trouble is generally going to steer naturally away from people who appear confident. If this person that they're looking at looks like they can handle themselves, they're probably not going to try it. They're looking for somebody that looks frightened, that looks like they identify with victim, looks like they don't think they can handle something. That's the kind of person that a predator like that is going after. And if you don't display those sort of things, you're probably going to avoid most of it.
And you know, lastly, you know, you're dealing with a lot of depressive people that want to they want to learn power, they want to do something good, but they don't have the personal self-esteem and power to do that. And they're not necessarily being placed in all these, you know, crazy situations or out there fighting gangs and such. And they're, you know, how do we empower those people to see the little things? I mean, I spent a good 10 years of my life very, very ill, pretty much disabled in the outback. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what that's like, not having any stimulus and not knowing if there was anything magical to engage in around me. For those people, the unemployed people and the people that can't do anything right now with their lives, the unwilling pacifists, what would you have to say to us?
An awful lot of people use that title victim as a crutch. They use it as a reason why they can't. And what you need to do is discard it. You need to throw it away. You need to find your way. You need to empower yourself. You need to seize your power because you have it. I don't care who you are, what kind of condition you're in, depressed or whatever, you have
boredom.
It.
What do bored people, how do they harness it? What do video games do? You know, we have so many questions for you. We only have 3 minutes left. Oh, my goodness. But would you say, one of the things we wanted to quickly cross was in terms of magic not being like, people sometimes comment that they like having a pet to accentuate their magic. You had a very good analogy about this that you could have described for me. You were telling me about, instead of using a cat to amplify your magical power, you tell me us that story that doesn't involve animals or any kind of ritualistic or animal or taking advantage of any other animals. You were telling us about that the other day.
Okay, I'm trying to remember the story here.
Well, there was that, there was the Chinese finger wand, and then you said, so I take a hammer, and that...
Oh, yes, okay, all right. Yes. Basically, there's something I do in classes. I walk in, I put a hammer on the table in front of me. I just stand there and look at it, and don't say anything for a few minutes. And then I say, you know what, it's not doing anything. It's sitting there. But then if I pick this hammer up, I can direct kinetic energy. I can pull nails, I can drive nails. Same thing with a magic wand. It's just a stick, you know.
And you wouldn't need to use
it. It's a focusing tool, just like any martial artist will tell you. Any stick is a focusing tool, a quarterstaff, a sword. It's also an antenna, and you can use it to receive energy, to determine where the energy is flowing around you. But ultimately, they're tools. And you don't need them. All you need is yourself. You have everything you need right now. Since you, the day you were born, you've had it. It's simply a matter of learning how to use it.
Kerr, we have one or two more minutes left, and we have a good point here. So one of our participants in the group here is saying, you know, anger can be beneficial. It can motivate change. It can be a motivator.
Certainly can. Absolutely.
Do tell us when it's appropriate, please, and how it feels to have appropriate anger.
You know what? Anger is a very useful thing. Like your participant said, it can motivate you. It can build up that energy you need to start off and pursue a particular goal. But when you're actually engaging in something, so you run into an obstacle or something, you need to put that emotional stuff aside. You need a mind like water, mind like the moon. It has to be like a still pond, so that if something happens, it's like dropping a stone in the water and you can see all of those ripples coming out. You need to be free of that so that you can operate and so that you can and that's basically what the martial artist tries to do is get away from that, capture that no mind. You know, if you want to lose kumite, you're going to spar with somebody, get angry, you're going to lose. You're going to end up on the mat, guarantee it, because it will cloud your perception every single time. You know, you need to put that, step away from that, put it aside. It's you need to get into another reality and simply perceive.
And finally, a sense of humor must produce very good magic, not?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
A sense of humor would also produce good magic, would it not?
If you really understand yourself, you're really comfortable with yourself, you should be able to laugh at yourself, you know? Absolutely.
And that would probably be, I think, the purest way of probably resolving any problems, if possible. I found that worldwide.
Very often.
One thing can break tension so quickly.
Indeed.
You know, a fascinating chat with you. Kerr, you are writing some books right now. I was reading about on your website that you have been so busy in your practice. Do tell us what you are bringing up right now in terms of your work, and we are going to be...
The last book that I put out in a metaphysical sense was How to Be Glorious, which is talking about a lot of things we've been talking about tonight. And it's out there as an ebook and also in print. I also write Sword and Sorcery Fantasy. And I'm working on the third book of the Purification Trilogy right now.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that's going to be out in November. And I also write paranormal romance as Gary Bryce, because nobody thinks that the guy can write romance. And the Darkman trilogy has been completed, and it's out there. So if you're interested in that, I encourage people to go out.
And please look at his YouTube videos for people like with minds like schedules like mine.
Every month, sometimes several times a month, we put out videos. We have a YouTube channel for the Order of Skaia, and you put some on your site there, I see.
Yes.
I do daily affirmations on Twitter and Facebook and Google+, including some videos that I find elsewhere.
Okay.
If people are interested, they're looking for these things to help point them in the right direction and get themselves going, find that power. I encourage him to check this stuff out. That's why I put it out there.
No, it's fantastic. And he doesn't, even if you lived in British Columbia, he doesn't charge a lot to be part of his guidance, to take part in his guidance. Kerr, thank you so much. Your message is so much
welcome.
What we needed to hear.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor and a privilege.
Absolutely fantastic. Please stay in touch, and maybe we'll bring you back onto the show when you have your next book out.
I would love it. It would be great. And for those of you listening out there, go out there and be glorious.
Be glorious and compassionate, and remember your power.
Indeed.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you. We learned so much tonight about structuring good psychic and mental etiquette for the benefits of mutual psychic respect. So it would be great to have him back. And in the meantime, we have a lot of questions that we want to think about. For those of you that would like to connect to us for the second portion or the second half of our show, this is going to be also an interesting part where we are going to take some of the themes from this particular show and blend it into our conversation. And then at 15:15, we're going to take in some of our personal callers. You can ask anything at that point. It doesn't have to be about psychic etiquette, but though we would be more than happy to accommodate any additional questions on this matter. So, I'd like to be able to see how you guys, what you thought of this show. Maureen?
On mute. You know what? I think you forgot the announcement part.
Maureen, yes.
The announcement. The announcement.
Well, why don't you be the announcer?
Oh, my gosh. No, I did that last week. Remember, Carmen? Go. You give me more. The announcements on, you know.
So, we have a psychic blog. We have the psychicbloggersite.com. Sorry, this is my second show, guys.
You're doing great.
And, you know, we also have psychics on here. We have on psychicaccess.com. Apart from UK Steve, US Stephen, and US Maureen, you have Canadian Carmen, and you have the rest of the unholy crew. All of us are pretty much here waiting 24 hours a day, and they've been verified and vetted by some very, very, very dedicated people on this site. All the co-hosts, co-presenters here on PsychicAccessRadio.com work at Psychic Access. Wow, that's a tongue twister. And if you would like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us here. We'd love to hear from you. By the way, site owners and webmasters can earn, I didn't know this, I need to do this, 50 cents a minute on every reading on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. You can visit us more for these details. And if you like our show or our events, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room now or in the next show and listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There is always something for everybody, so please do spread the word. We really appreciate it. And now we're going to give the call out number in 15 minutes. So Maureen, I'm trying to get you in on banter because you're so good to go.
I don't know. I know nothing about banter or barter.
I know.
Well, it was a great interview. And, you know, I there was a lot of different areas that you covered with him. And I wasn't quite sure which, I mean, it was a lot of different things, but about, which I found very interesting because it was diverse. This topic was very diverse with what you were speaking of. I do remember there was one thing he was talking about, you know, talking about anything, you know, to do with our abilities. I've always said this, and I take pride. Well, I am proud of this. I'm able to. A dog's barking out there. Sorry, it's not me. To look beyond appearances, to look beyond. That's so important to look beyond. And also to have a confidence about things where if you're coming up to some, you said something about a lightning bolt, right? And there's some people, now my feeling is this, my thing works is this. I tell people to put themselves not into the white light thingy, but put themselves, especially when they're empath. And, as you know, Carmen, you can identify because it's so difficult. You walk around picking up too much stuff from everybody. Well, I do. I can't block them out. I put a steel container around me. So
mine's a light, elastic, flexible material.
Yeah, well, this way I don't have anybody coming through at all. It's completely steel. It doesn't work. And then there was stuff he talked about in meditation. I loved every bit of things he was talking about. And I do want to say, because it's getting closer, and you're going to have to hear me about my daughter. She's leaving for Thailand less than a week. And, you know, she graduated neuroscience, studying the brain. And she is actually going to Thailand for 7 months to study with the monks, because her thing about, even though she's an academic mind, bringing meditation into how it affects our brain. Which is, you know, like I said, we're in a great new age right now, the real new age. And so he was talking about different types of meditation, and it's not the same for everybody. And believe me, I was a transcendental meditator in the 70s, and I didn't like doing it 2 times a day, 30 minutes a day. So I do it every few minutes, and it helps every few minutes, and it does calm ourselves. And my daughter's going out to put some studies into that. So with the scientific world, it's proven fact. So I loved your guest all around. There's so many things he was talking about I would just love, but I'm not going to go on forever about that. I'll give someone else.
I want to ask you a personal question. I mean,
yeah.
Maureen,
sure.
You seem to me, your vibe, your feeling is just so peaceful, and I envy, yes, the way you feel, very silken, very calm, very patient when confronted, or you have often very patient explanations to difficult questions. And so would you characterize yourselves as ever getting angry, and what do you do?
You mean angry with in what regard? With somebody that's ignorant?
No, just in general. Anything on the street during the day.
Oh,
and you
I
got
see.
Your little Faraday cage around you.
I see what you're saying.
What would you do?
No, in fact, the thing is, I was talking about, we were talking about in the chat room, anger, and I was talking about forgiveness. My anger is something that I find goes hand in hand with my forgiveness. I also feel when I'm out in the streets, I get angry because people don't know how to drive because I'm the only one who does. But I mean, that's a different story in itself. But with anger towards ignorant, well, I want to know what the context of this we're talking about.
I just want to anger management, because clearly, I mean, for you, I mean, there must be a frustration.
Yeah.
At times, and I just wonder if that you find you can express it. It seems to me and that would frustrate you even more.
Yes. See,
women don't have the right to feel anger. When we get feel angry, we get told we're bossy, crazy,
yeah,
or neurotic.
Or we're too sensitive. We're too sensitive. I used
yeah,
to
yeah.
get it a lot.
So, and you know, well, that was a good question we should have posed to Kerr, and maybe next time, is the perception of anger. I mean, how to own it. As women, directly, we're told not to.
Yes, you're right. And you have to use your words very carefully if you want to express it in a verbal sense. Now, also, I can give the evil eye that my mother gives. You know, the mothers always have that evil eye with anger. I try also, a little bit dysfunctional that I am, I always want to be liked. But then I'll snap with somebody taking advantage of me. I get angry. And that's something I've been working on for a long time. Because you're right. It isn't comfortable being able to approach your anger whether women or not, because I've been told when I was growing up, you're angry. What's the big deal? You're beating I got all of it. You're too sensitive. You're beating a horse. Whatever you call that, beating a horse.
Do we
whatever.
Still beat horses? I don't think so.
You know, you're beating a. There's that wording. There's that terminology.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. An old horse or whatever. And I get more angry because I was dismissed. Completely dismissed about my feelings of anger, whether it was valid or not. I don't go around being an angry person, but I feel that when I am and I've tried to express it, I get shut down. So I kind of, you know what, I've kind of repressed it. And I think it's been hard for me to forgive in that sense to a lot of things. It goes hand
and that would bring us on, yeah, that's these are all these subtleties that you have to learn. And I think that a good psychic warrior would have to, unfortunately, be the recipient of a lot of abuse.
Yeah, you're
so,
right.
No, it's probably true. It really is. You know, so thank you, Maureen.
You're welcome. Thank you, Carmen.
That's very, very truthful of you. I appreciate your sincerity and your openness. Steven, U.S. Steven, how are you? Did you want to put in your input?
Sure. There are a couple of parts of the interview that grabbed my attention. I liked his comments about meditation, especially because, you know, sometimes a lot of people, we see meditation as a very passive process where you just sit there. And if this is one's approach to meditation, then you're not going to, it's not going to bear any real fruit because you're not doing any work. Meditation is actually an active process, a process of cataloging the stuff that's in your brain at the time. And that can be quite taxing, believe it or not. It's a lot of work. It takes skill, just like riding a unicycle takes skill, for example, or turning a cartwheel takes skill. And that's something about meditation that we often don't think about. We just plop down and sit in the lotus position if we can configure ourselves in that way. And after a while, we get disappointed in the results, I think.
Do you believe in magic, Steve?
Oh, yes, actually, I do. I mean, certainly not in the, you know, C.S. Lewis once wrote in one of his amazing books about Christianity that one mustn't expect nonsense out of God. And so I think the same principle can be applied with magic. You know, you certainly can't, shouldn't really expect like a Harry Potter type of, you know, Hermione and Ron and Hogwarts type of experience. But magic does happen in the sense of you manifest a very specific reality in life. You make it happen. You, reality sort of bends in accordance to your will, and it takes practice to do that. There's a formula. He made other commentary about that, and it made me think about the Brotherhood of Light formula for magic, which is combining directed thinking with induced emotion, sort of combining a visualization of the thing that you desire along with manufacturing the correct emotion to go to actually attract the thing into your life, which is more difficult than what it sounds like.
I know, and the most part about magic that I think we find most frustrating is that it has a delay effect. Let's say intent, prayer, or magic has a delay effect. You know, sure. 1 to 5 years, let's say. And most people get really frustrated, you know, that they don't have something appear right away.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the old adage of be careful what you wish for. And you would want to expect that to some extent, you know, magic were intelligent, like a program that was able to, you know, maybe reprogram itself, or at least, you know, buffer
itself.
It's self-aware, correct.
Sure.
But now, if the person is not...
Bottom line is that you're going to be responsible for the forces you call into play. This is natural law. Whether or not, you know, it's like getting pulled over by the police and claiming that you are ignorant of speed limit. Ignorance isn't going to be much of an excuse. You're going to have to face the consequences of that natural law. And unfortunately, there's that. I mean, that's especially why it's important to practice ethics in your way of going about this. If you apply these magical techniques to manifest a negative reality, someone's downfall, for instance, then you can expect destructive consequences to befall yourself.
Yeah, which is always the adage of, then we have maybe people that are running around sort of like, you know, pre-suicidal, thinking that if they hurt other people, they might be able to, you know, hurt themselves or hurt, you know, in other words, it's the only way that they know how to defend themselves. So I'm wondering here, you know, in a sense, it's unfortunate that you get these ideals in magic that are very, very domineering, very power-oriented, and where people tend to use it to hurt themselves, and they don't even realize it.
That's right. They don't have to be magicians to do black magic. They can do it quite unwittingly.
Yeah, and do you know what you want? Because sometimes you could be in love with that lover that you think is perfect for you. He ends up being a stalker and a murderer, and then you're done for. And then you've pretty much, you know, gotten that love spell. Well, thank you, Stephen. And
my
now
pleasure.
We're going to bring in Steve. Mr. Mysterious, what do you think? Steve. Is he there? He's very mysterious. Okay, well, then we'll go back here.
He's back. I can hear him. Steve,
Rustling
I know you're
in the background.
No, I think I heard him go off mute. Well, that's all right.
Oh, we do have problems with our respective PCs. You know, it really depends
our respective selves. Are not
can you hear me now?
Yeah. No, we do occasionally have mute issues. I don't think it's actually Steve. I know he's right here with us.
Oh,
yes,
come
we can
on.
Hear you. Oh, yeah. He's abstaining conscientiously. No. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
How strange. I wasn't on mute, but I don't know. You couldn't hear me. It's interesting, though, because I was thinking of and actually started to speak about somebody that was silenced. I was really reflecting upon the interview and the comments about being a warrior and how being a warrior does not necessarily mean fighting, and that peace is very powerful. So I was thinking
That's
of this.
Something. Yeah.
I was thinking of this incredible girl, Malala, who was shot in the head by the Taliban in Pakistan because she was promoting the importance of education for children, and particularly girls. And she's something of a superstar now. She was interviewed on the TV in the US yesterday. And I was just blown away by her comment, because she was asked by the interviewer, if you again encountered the member of the Taliban that shot you in the head, what would you say? And she said, I would say how important education is for children, including girls, and I would tell him that that applies equally to his children and his daughters. And then I would say, now do with me what you want. She's so steadfast to her message about what is right. And
I think she's preternatural. She's before her time. And yes, most of us would not be able to endure, you know, our past history, let alone a lifetime ahead of us, facing that kind of situation.
She's incredible. She's going to do amazing things in this world.
But as she said, there are many Malalas in this world. Mm-hmm. And I would have to agree with her. There are the silent, conscientious objectors, the abused woman, the abused children, the men that are abused that are not able to voice their concerns for fear of appearing weak. But there certainly isn't it a nice thought that I think the meek are rising. You know, they always predicted that, didn't they? Or was that just logic, sheer logic? You know? But it's so lovely to see the expression. Do you yourself, I know that you tend to be more of a somebody that more of an intent materializer, or are you don't strike me as Wiccan or necessarily magic intent oriented, are you?
Well, Steve? Yes and no, actually. I believe absolutely in magic, and I always remind myself that the term magic is associated with the term magi, the wise ones. So you think of the three wise men in Spanish, they are los tres magos, the magicians.
I love that.
Those who are initiated into the ancient mysteries. And so the three wise men were magi. They were astrologers for sure, because they did identify what's known as an apulse, which is a very rare astronomical occurrence, and that did lead them to identify the birth of a very special being, and they identified the location of that child's birth through astrocartography. So they were associated with magic. And I very much practice magic. I don't cast spells, so I'm not Wiccan or pagan, but I believe absolutely in the power of projecting consciousness to create. And I experiment and work with that a lot. I think it's incredibly powerful. But I don't think that the information in the public domain actually explains to people how magic works. So if you think it just in simple terms of the books out there on the law of attraction, they don't actually properly explain, or I haven't found one yet that properly explains the truth about manifesting and using magic to create circumstances and occurrences. They seem to be quite limited in their disclosure. And I say that having read a lot of books, so I'm not somebody that's just read one book.
I think there's a lot of books that are hidden and have been destroyed.
Yes, yes.
You know?
From the Library of Alexandria.
That's correct. That's correct. And was it Constantine as well that lost all their books? The Greek, there was, in terms of all of the books that were left, I believe there's only one room. So we have scores and scores and scores of books that were destroyed over the ages, right?
Yes.
Able to just call out, to remind you here, is you guys, you folks can call in right now. You can call in for your free reading or your advice, your personal problems. And the number that you can call us at is 724-444-4851. And we'd love to hear from you. I'm sorry, Steve, let's go back to that while we're waiting for our callers right now, because we've just basically opened up the lines. Steve, you must have read a lot. What is your background in study as well? Because you do seem extremely well-versed and very well-spoken. I know it's the British accent, but really.
That's it, yeah. That's
that helps.
People presume that if you have a British accent, you're well-educated, which is not necessarily true. But as a child, I always used to read about metaphysics. I always wanted to go to my room and read, so I was always very fascinated by knowledge and discovery, and I used to read all kinds of books. I remember picking up a book of Aleister Crowley's when I was seven and putting it down. I just didn't like it. I didn't want to read it. And I picked it up again the next day, and my guide said, you don't need to be exploring that man's work. And so I've always steered clear of Aleister Crowley's work, but I've read a lot, and I try to find, one of my teachers said to me, identify the best possible sources and master them. In other words, don't just go after everything that's available. Find what is the best and then concentrate on that. So my first degree was business management and languages, linguistics, and then I continued studying from there. But I think if you're a metaphysician, if you're dealing with the mysteries, the magic, you're making a commitment to never-ending study, because there's so much to explore. But I do believe that we can gain an enormous amount of insight and knowledge through meditation, through just connecting with spirit. I believe we can download.
How do you handle your anger, Steve? I'm sure you must, underneath that cool cucumber demeanor, you must.
It's a good question. I think that my anger really is associated with romantic relationships.
Yeah.
So the two relationships I've had, I felt very disappointed, and I had quite a lot of anger. But I tell you what, from the perspective of magic and casting one's consciousness, I'll tell you something that's very personal but very interesting. And it reminds us of how powerful we are and how we have to be careful with our thoughts, because I discovered that my first partner, 3 years after I had left England, hadn't worked. So he hadn't worked in 3 years. He couldn't find a job. And I realized eventually that there was this synchronicity between him finding work and me actually coming to peace with our relationship and him, and not being angry anymore. And it happened with my second partner as well. My second partner seemed to have a lot of difficulties after the end of our relationship finding work.
So you would say closure is the most important thing for you.
Yeah, I found that if I was harboring anger, my consciousness was projecting and holding somebody else back, which is wrong. And so I've realized just the power of our thoughts and our consciousness, and realized that it's not healthy to harbor anger, and that we can really harm other people and harm ourselves. And the other thing is, I know that any form of discord kills something within ourselves. So we get sick because of discord, and anger is not good stuff to hang on to.
No, not willingly. I think one can experience it, but to hang on to it as a badge would be difficult. You know, thank you, Stephen. We have a caller. We have a caller from Texas for Stephen. Actually, thank you, Steve. Stephen, U.S.
Yes.
Stephen, you have a caller from Texas.
Thank you very much. Hello, who am I speaking with in Texas?
This is Bethy.
Kathy?
Bethy.
Ah, okay. Well, how may I help you this evening?
I want to know if my male friend and I are going to work out our differences.
Okay, will they work out their differences? One moment, please, while I pick up on that. And it's not looking too good. that you will. In fact, I think that you likely will not. I can see that right now your friendship with him is undergoing a massive sort of transformation, and that I do believe we're in the beginning part of this transformation. In other words, things are going to keep on changing between you. In the end, will you be able to even salvage a friendship out of all of this? Perhaps, but it would be among the, you know what I'm saying? It'll be just a sort of barest type of civil friendship, if that, you know?
Okay.
I'm sorry to be so negative about that, but this is what I'm seeing, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Best of luck to you. Bye-bye.
Hi, well, at least we're straight to the point. Maureen, caller from Ohio.
Thank you, Carmen. Hello, Ohio. This is Maureen. Hello. Wait for it. Here she comes. Here. Hello? Ohio.
I know it's hard to get Ohio to say
no,
Ohio.
Ohio's coming. I can feel the Ohio.
Ohio.
Hello, Ohio. Oh, I'm going to start singing Stephen Stills. And
we have fun with this every week.
Hello, Ohio. Now I'm going to get tongue twisted. I know Ohio is
at least Ohio. We haven't had Milwaukee's in yet, hey? Have we?
No, we haven't. Like Ohio, though. I know Ohio's getting ready. Wait for it.
No, they'll pop in when she's ready. She's
yes. It could be a he, though. But it's probably... No, we get he's in. She is she. Wait for it. But if Ohio may have just been listening... If you can hear the show, it means you're on. Because when you get on the line...
We'll definitely get another caller. We'll just go into the next part and bring... Somebody else will come on in.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, you know, we were just actually, sorry, we had to rudely interrupt Steve, and he was actually really talking very nicely about his experiences in relationships and such, and love and anger. And you know what I find? That the basic premise of, you know, my theory of, you know, kind of like one of these things about people's dominance is that they'll never allow themselves to really lose. You know why? Because I think that in the end, our motivation is love and sex, and that where there's always that basic primal instinct, you cannot really want, you know, people will always want to interact with each other. And even if, I mean, that is the one strongest motivator, and that is one of the things that keeps us alive, or unfortunately, really sad relationships, you know? So, I mean, that's what Steve was wrapping up on. And Stephen, you just had an unhappy call. How do you deal with helping somebody through a difficult situation where you're getting a lot of emotional sadness coming your way? Surely this client may have had just a bad evening with her partner. We understand that. We face that kind of frustration all the time in our jobs. What would you tell her?
Well, to remember that even though the short-term news might seem a little challenging, it's still for her long-term benefit. That's the thing to keep in mind. It's in her long-term best interests. And sometimes in life, you just have to let go. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. It just sort of grinds along, and it changes things. And we have to adapt to those changes. And in the end, everything is going to be okay.
It always does actually end up okay, and I think what a lot of our callers don't realize, and people don't realize, and that life is really long, and essentially that problem always ends up being okay in the end. It's just the problem is that more of them tend to compound on top of it. So when you've solved one, there's five more, and that's what care was definitely, and I think it's one of the things we really have to remember, is it's really true, is that in order to achieve perfection, and someone told me this once before, and they say, be careful how good you are at things, because the more will be demanded of you. So then that puts you in a position of, should you ever be good at anything, because you'll always be bad at what you do, because you're too good at it, you know?
Well, one definitely wants to tread delicately, even as far back as the 17th century. William Lilly, the author of Christian Astrology, the foundational textbook of astrology, said that you don't want to destroy people's hopes. But by the same token, you know, you have to protect your reputation and tell the truth as well as you can see it. You don't want to have the client expect something unrealistically. So it's a fine line to walk, without a doubt.
Well, I mean, I have a bunch of questions that we can throw out there while we're waiting for callers to come in, because I think that many of us are rather stunned by a lot of news events, and they're probably not necessarily, right. Their minds are on everything. I mean,
sure.
I don't know about you, but it's not just love, it's the future. So, you know, while we're at it, we may as well, like, just discuss certain things that are on our minds. And in terms of, you know, heroes these days, people that have maybe really had to endure a tremendous amount of suffering, people that you would think would be really, really, really angry. The examples of, you know, Malala being one of them, our clients. Here we go. Here comes, we have a caller coming through again for Maureen.
Ohio. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're back. Hi, Ohio. How are you? Hello.
Ooh, it's slow. It's
okay.
I think we lost that one.
Stephen, every time you come, I echo.
Actually, you mustn't be worried, but tonight we are having some connection issues. I think the world is. You know, on occasion, like, we tend to be going through these. Yeah, we're going through these little cyber spats right now.
We and can't blame it. Can't blame it on retrograde, that's for sure. We can blame it on me.
Not yet,
me.
No. Shh, don't say that word. Never say the R word. Never bring it up.
Well, you know, maybe Ohio will try again, and it might be that they're having a hard time connecting.
Well, you know, what do you guys want to bring up when it comes to magic? Because I know
magic
I live in
is
a reality.
Real. Yeah.
Well, and is reality?
My reality. You know what? I want to say this. When I was 17, 18, in the 70s, I was particularly one of those gals that was interested in doing what we called white magic. And I want to tell you something about that for all you listening. It's all lovely and lovely. It is real. Things are intensely real. But I'll tell you something. White magic is a manipulation just as much as the other kind. Oh, there's another caller from Montreal.
Oh, Maureen, guess what? You got one from Canada. What fun. Yeah.
I think I know who this is. Hello, Montreal. How are you? Charose? Charose?
Hello?
Charose, I'm a psychic. Hi, Charose. How are you?
Yes, you are. I'm all right, and you?
I'm okay, thank you. And what can I help you with this evening?
Okay, well, just about my love life.
No kidding. Okay. Is there, like, because, you know, we're our time restraint, that perhaps, can you ask me a direct question so I can help you the best I can with the time I have? A direct question.
Okay. Sure. When, around what time frame or something do you see me in a committed relationship?
Okay. I'm laughing at myself. I get it. I got you, Charose. I'm just saying this because, bless her heart, Charose is a caller on psychicaccess.com, and I adore her. We all know her. Charose, listen, the whole scenario is you will not be an old withering woman alone, okay? And I will say to everybody, Charose is only 60. No, I'm just joking. Charose is a young woman, and I do feel, Charose, that a committed relationship, you have an opportunity to be in one right now, which is very difficult because of their situation personally. However, I also feel that you have a choice. You know, I do see something, again, within the next 4 months, I do see, even though things aren't looking like they're happening with you and maybe somebody else, but the bottom line is I do see somebody around you with a lot of havoc going on in their personal life. I also see there's some manipulation of people telling, you know, there's a lot of people that want to tell you stories, gossip, or give you insight. Maybe it's me. It's not me. But be sure to be careful who you confide in, because it looks like, it feels like, and it looks like it's like you may become very angry, but on the other hand, I do feel within the next 4 months, things are going to really start turning around and do a total turn around in matters of the heart with the person that you're dealing with right now. And I see a big burden coming off your back. You know, 2014, you are going to be in a committed relationship. It'll feel more like the rational way that, in a perfect world, if you look at it this way, if you would ask anybody out there listening, if you were asked a question, when am I going to be in a committed relationship? I would love to say, for me, it'd be easy to say, okay, on this date this year, that will happen. I feel that you're heading that direction, but I do feel 2014 is going to be the prominent year, that you are definitely going to be in a serious relationship that I see moving forward to taking a step even beyond, meaning more of a committed that goes on. Do you follow me, what I mean by that?
Well, the guy, is it the same guy that I'm asking about?
Yeah, I do feel it is, because of the intense havoc I see around it. But again, I do feel, you know, you have a choice with this. Either way, whatever direction you choose to take, I do see 2014 being a very good year. And at the beginning, it would be a hard-earned victory if you decide to stick it out with what's going on now. Or you can, regardless, I do feel 2014 is going to be the year that you're going to meet the person or know of the person already that will be heading on towards the 2015. You'll know exactly where you stand, and it will be in a committed relationship. And it's more of a direct answer.
And the relation thing, or me being angry, what is that about?
Oh, come on. Being angry, if you are going to want to endure what's going on around you right now, okay. There would be a lot of anger because of the craziness around the other person's life. And you not knowing where you stand because it's not so clear cut, you know?
The manipulation, is it other people like that I'm talking to that might
want to... It's interference. I do see a mother figure interference type, not
my
yours. Be careful who you can find, like I said, because this is craziness. But it looks like you're going to be getting good news soon. That way, things will start feeling a little bit better soon here, if that's any consolation.
Great. We have a call.
Thank you, Charose. So thank you for calling. I hope I helped you, okay?
Thanks, Charose.
Bye-bye.
I hope to meet you too soon. We have a call from Ohio for Steve.
Hello, Ohio. Who's calling?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name? Hello, Ohio, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Hi, what's your name?
Gladys.
Gladys, how can I help you?
Well, I have a problem. I feel so down and depressed.
Right.
I feel depressed.
Okay.
And it seems like that's affecting my self-esteem.
Right. Okay. And you want to know, obviously, when that's going to lift, presumably.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Well, honestly, the first thing I would say to you is be fair to yourself, because you're not feeling your best. But it's not simply that you're depressed. You've had a really tough time. I would say probably the last 10, 12 months, life has been very challenging for you. So I want to say that because my guides indicate to me that it's not purely that you have an issue with depression. You've experienced circumstances that have caused you to feel really low and not to feel particularly good about yourself, and it's associated with the way another person or other people have treated you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going through this process of picking yourself back up, really. You haven't been treated well, and we've all been in situations in which we didn't feel respected or treated well, honored, loved by another person or other people. And it's interesting because we were talking about relationships earlier, and I really believe, or my experience so far in life is, that healthy relationships come when we have a great relationship with ourselves. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's so true, because when it comes to magic or the law of attraction, actually resonating something in order to bring circumstances back towards you, if we don't feel good about ourselves, then that's what we're putting out into the world, and somehow the world confirms that for us. We encounter people that reinforce that feeling. So the card that comes up for you is the Ace of Cups, actually, for the present circumstance. And I would say, in your case, this really indicates falling in love with yourself, nurturing and loving yourself and allowing yourself to be who you are, not trying to be what other people want you to be, but truly being in love with yourself and doing all of the things that you love to do and making yourself feel better by rewarding yourself with everything that really uplifts you and makes you feel better, doing all of the things you enjoy. Now, if you are able to do that, I feel that things are really going to pick up for you. And I feel that as we get into spring particularly, you're going to feel much more expansive and you'll feel better about yourself and life will really start to unfold. I feel that you need to walk away from this person or these people that have been causing you to feel so low. It's time for you to almost step forward towards yourself and away from the people that are causing you these feelings of imbalance.
Yes.
And, you know, looking after yourself, putting yourself first. But I feel that you'll feel much better if you embrace falling in love with yourself, allowing yourself to do all the things you want to do, to feel good. If you like to read books, read books. If you like to walk, walk. Do what you love to do. Reward yourself. Honor yourself. And you'll find that the circumstances around you start to shift as long as you turn away from people that you need to turn away from. Okay?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, very much.
Good. Well, go and fall in love with yourself, because I know you're a wonderful person. You're very creative, very sensitive. Look after yourself, okay?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Lots of love to you.
Oh, thank you, Stephen. That is so nice, because Steve, because, you know, we have thousands of these people, and I think in the moment, they just don't know it's going to go away, and I feel her energy and I feel her sadness, and she has to know it's seasonal, it's circumstantial. We're all very, very depressed and worried right now. We can't help but not look at things and feel not even entitled. And this is my problem too, falling in love with oneself. So bless you, caller. I'm sorry to hear you're going through such a difficult night. I have a call right now from the state of Georgia, and I'm just wondering if we can connect. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Kathy. Who is this?
My name is Carmen. I'm your telepath and empath at hand. What is your question? What is your name?
I'm Kathy.
Oh, hi, Kathy. I don't think we've met. My name is Carmen, and what can I do for you?
I'm trying to see. I was waiting for face-to-face in-person interview with ING, and I haven't heard from them, so I don't know what the problem is, but I haven't got the no thank you letter either, so I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Oh, but they're a bank, right? So cut them some slack now. And I think most people are not going to... ING, correct? Not to do any promotion here, but as far as I know, I would say that's not necessarily unusual. Let's have a look here and see what comes up in your reading. One moment, okay? So let's.
Okay, and you said they are banking, they're insurance.
I'm not sure. Were they insurance or bank? I'm not sure.
So they're insurance.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, that's an interesting conundrum. I mean, it depends on what country you're in, but let me have a look here and see what your situation is. Are you in the U.S. right now? You're in Canada,
yes.
Right? Oh, they have ING there too. Okay. So let me have a look here and see if there's anything being affected, let's say, by circumstances right now, because a lot of people are just like holding their breath, but they're just keeping it, you know, steady. What we're looking at here is they're non-committal right now because of legal, overwhelming legal anxiety. And this is anxiety with This is more than likely something that has to do with a background check. Part of their hiring is going to have to do with that. Now, what this means is to me is that there may be something that they need to do to double check, and they may be actually looking into your background, you know, as we speak. And I don't know if you gave them authorization to do so, but they may as well. They may be still checking your references. What background do you have, Kathy? Are you in law or anything like that? What is your...
Accounting, but they wouldn't be checking my background right now.
Okay, then I would say that there's...
If they do it in person and make me an offer, they wouldn't be checking anything.
Then what I'm thinking is that there may be some kind of a reorganization within the company, but there is something here that's happening where they are actually changing certain hierarchies, the strata. That's really your real answer. That kind of means they're a bit too busy to hire. That doesn't, I don't see here, it's like you that's wrong. It says here they are overwhelmed with a change of, you know, perhaps legislation, regulation, and they might still get back to you. But I know that, I think I remember you calling a couple weeks ago, speaking to somebody else. I'm not sure. But what I would say is that for the amount of time that you've been waiting for a response, I would probably can that job if that would be the 3-week wait. Please move on to something more productive for you. Because it feels to me like you would, or can reapply. It must feel like your application is kind of lost in the fray of all of the workings that are going on right now. And this doesn't really have much to do with the market. It has to do with internal restructuring. I want you to know this is very different.
Okay, so I'm not following because I just spoke to them last week. So it's not like I haven't spoke to them.
Okay, just keep this for another couple weeks. I would imagine that what they're doing is they're, I mean, I'm getting here really that they're avoiding initiating anything right now because they need to get more detail right now. And that's just the way they work. And it probably means that there's a lukewarm, you know, I don't want to be the one who gives you bad news, but there's a lukewarm kind of approach to this. Don't be offended because I believe it is due to some of the work that they're doing within the levels of the company. Once the company is through this, they're going to be very strong, you see. So you just have to keep going through this. And I would say, don't not reapply. But it's almost like there are a lot of people applying.
Okay, I'm way confused in your total reading. When you say don't reapply, you can't reapply for the same job. I meant you said reapply. You can't reapply for the same job.
No, but you can apply again with the company for another job. When you're working with a large company or organization like that, it's not like you're put onto a blacklist if you reapply with that company. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, when you said reapply, I assumed you were talking about that position. So do you see me hearing from them or
let's
not?
Look at that. Yeah. One moment. Try not to, if this is your life, try not to get anxious about this yet. What I'm getting is this change in the company. So, as in hearing from them, polite, non-committal, for now, they may give you an excuse, but in time, this exchange will be positive. So what you're going to see is what a lot of my coworkers and colleagues tend to undergo, which is a very pleasant interview. And often they start forging relationships with that company. Sometimes they're bumping you off to see if you can handle it. Sometimes that's part of the interview process. Sometimes they hire the big fish in right away, but the other people do have to reapply. I know that for larger companies like Disney, for example, there's a very high failure rate. It's almost a 95% failure rate. Now, in your industry, there's nothing that comes in here as unhealthy for your application. Like, let's say if I had to look at how your application came across, are you confused anymore now, Kathy? I just wanted to make sure because we're on the same track here. Like, you need to keep on at this company.
I'm totally confused. I'm okay. So
okay.
Okay.
I know it's a very difficult time, and we just have to keep on at the job searches. Pardon
me?
If you have any other questions, our time is up, but I really just know that I have nothing to do with the way that I see this company. I see nothing to do with you, and I don't see any necessarily this being negative. There's just a wait, and they are restructuring, and that means they could probably bring you in some more later. But if it's a high-level job that you have a specific interest for, then I would say possibly not. And that's my real truthful answer. You know?
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. Well, that's just the life of job applications, and it's the least favorite question that I have to deal with in my work. I am an empath and a telepath, and I can see structures in companies and why they're not hiring and how you can make things better in terms of your hiring process and how to improve on a human resource scale, you know, how to get into a company. But I would say that it's definitely not off, but it's so difficult not to remain, to remain impartial sometimes, eh? Oh, I think I hear the crickets.
I do believe I have a caller from Pennsylvania, no?
Really?
I think so.
That's not on my list here. That's wonderful. Welcome.
I could be wrong.
Well, let's bring that in and we'll try it and we'll float that.
You're not wrong. You're right.
Ah, hello, Pennsylvania. Who am I speaking with in Pennsylvania?
Steve, this is Penny.
Hi, Penny. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How can I help you this evening?
My divorce is finally finalized, but I'm a little concerned about my ex's motives and actions, and if he going to try to harm me. It did not come out in his favor at all, and every time he turns around, he's just being totally underhanded about everything still.
Right.
Even after the decision's been made, and I don't know if I should keep an eye out that he's going, because there was abuse in the relationship.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, yeah. And this is really the problem, that the big danger zone, Penny, as I see it, is that, you know, sure, the courts are going to say one thing, but, you know, if his sense of manhood or sense of power is shaken up or offended or imbalanced in any kind of way, then this might cause him to be vengeful. Do you see what I'm saying? And there is a possibility.
That's exactly his actions,
yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's not really much you can do about that, Penny, because, you know, the legal machinery is sort of taking away, you know, and he's just going to have to obey it and comply with it without getting his, you know, sense of manhood and sense of power and sense of worth wrapped up in all of this. But, you know, he's going to have a hard time doing it. I'm not going to say that he's going to get scary or anything like that. But he's certainly not going to be happy.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, he's definitely not going to be a happy camper, a happy person to deal with. I do not see him really impacting your physical security or immediate safety. Do you see? I see more along the lines of wanting to verbally gripe, et cetera, you know, rehashing the mistakes and the things that you did wrong, et cetera, that sort of thing.
Okay. So you don't see him planning into any type of confrontation with me or...
No, ma'am. I wouldn't predict any sort of violence or anything like that. In fact, I would expect future dealings with him to be, believe it or not, therapeutic, something that you both will actually heal from. So this might be a good lesson for him in the long run when he has to obey the legal system and, you know, he's forced to gain some humility because of that. So I don't see him as, for instance, getting violent or trying to really harm your life or your reputation or anything like that. But, you know, he will be pretty upset at first, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, the money that was sitting in escrow, he went as far as trying to tell them to release it to him, and they don't need any documentation. And we're talking a large sum of money.
Yeah, and you know, he's going to be quite shady, this guy is, so any documents that he produces, be sure to have those gone over by a lawyer, you know, I wouldn't really trust the guy at all, so, you know, take all due precautions with him, because again, he is deceitful. I don't judge him as being terribly violent with you on this one, especially if you meet him in like lawyers' offices and places where there are witnesses and all of that good stuff. So, you know, don't meet him by him in, you know, in solitary areas or, you know, late at night or anything like that.
Right.
Obviously.
Well, I mean, I actually don't run into him. I don't see him. I don't have anything to do with him. But it's very easy for him to track me down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the part that I was afraid of.
Yeah, I don't really see him trying to interfere in your life in a big, terrible way or to be a major hassle for you. You know, there'll be some uncomfortable moments ahead, but I expect that you can resolve things through conversation. I mean, through resolve things verbally. I do believe that will be possible in the long run. I'm not talking about immediate months here, but as the whole saga concludes, do you see? Believe it or not, I believe the end of the story might actually be a bittersweet one, or at least a semi-positive one, where you guys can be sort of halfway friends, at least, at the very least, halfway civil.
After everything he's done, I've tried that for 6 years, and he's turned my daughter against me. I really don't have any use to try to be civil with him.
Right, right.
Remember yes, the ma'am. Tenets of what we were taught tonight, right? Remind her of... pass, you know, being peaceful and not absorbing his anger.
That is true. That is true. I mean, you don't. This stress can have a negative effect on your body in terms of psychosomatic symptoms, stress, worry, depression, and you have to be careful not to let him affect your health in that sort of long distance way.
Right.
You
see, right.
Yeah. You have to. So yeah. Watch your
Actually,
diet.
It was. The one order that we got the other day, I it was almost like I could visually see him getting bound into like a force field that he's like, he's gonna have to live in that force field. He's like restricted from anything.
Well,
so that's just sort of
make sure you don't tie yourself up in that as well.
Yeah, give us a call over Psychic Access, Penny. Yeah. We have limited time here, but just come visit us over on the website and we'll get you sorted out. Okay.
Alrighty, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye, Penny.
Well handled, bye-bye. Stephen. That's a very scary situation. Yes. Maureen and a portion of our clients don't come back, so please take note that it's very important that she makes sure she's well looked after and taken care of. And we don't mean that predictively, but it's definitely a very important disclaimer, you know, when you're in a legal situation. Maureen.
California, where are
we
at?
Have California coming.
Hello, California. Hello.
Hey, Maureen, it's Reggie.
Oh, hi, Reggie. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I'm glad you're back. And, Reggie, what can I help you with?
Yeah, do you see me making any new friends lately?
New friends, as in?
Yes.
Any, are you talking about any type? Well, are you talking about
any type,
girls?
Any type. Any type.
Good, decent new friend. Got it. Yes. Quality person. Got it. Looks like you've been a little bit unhappy. That's you've been, well, you haven't been feeling good. Okay. Reggie, this is what I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely see somebody, somebody from, I feel you already know of, and the feeling that this person you're very connected to, it looks like a female that is not in a sense of looking like a student as before she was, and maybe not now, and it could be unconventional type of schooling, type of student of some sort. But I do feel it's something coming back around from your past. Like I said, I know you know this person, but prior to this, I feel like it was 2 years ago, perhaps. Everything that you wish and desire for this relationship did not come to be. There's a lot of pain and hurt or pain that's associated or third party that kind of interfered and ripped it apart. But I feel that there's an opportunity to come back to it. It's pretty intense, actually, Reggie. But I feel that it's going to be a really good timing. There was, like I said, there was a triangle involved. But I see other female friends around you and you getting along with all this female energy. And they're really happy. But it's somebody from your past. It looks fantastic. But it is the best. It is a good timing. But it is also good because it feels like there's a healing, deep healing that will come from this. And no more negative judgment as well. I know I don't have much time, but I think hopefully you would understand what I'm talking about. You know what I mean,
yeah,
Reggie?
Yeah.
So, what a lovely reading, yeah. Maureen. Thank goodness for that.
Well, it's you know, it's his reading. He owns it. I always tell people,
yes.
Don't thank me. It's your reading. So, I feel like Reggie. It's interesting. It's a good feeling, somebody coming back from a really devastating, painful issue, but it's positive.
You said it's someone I knew a couple of years ago?
Yeah, that you know, yes, that was painfully, yes. you know, I could be off on my time frame, but yes. And it was painful. It's really okay. Positive.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Reggie, and I'm thank glad you're Reggie. Doing okay. Okay?
All right. Okay.
Thanks, bye-bye. Reggie. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. We got, you know, it's like a statistically we get, you know, one out of maybe four good outcomes, and I think that's about right, and hopefully things will improve for our callers. And this brings us to the end of another wonderful program. Thank you, Doug. Yay! You don't hear Doug, but he's in the background. He's a good-looking man with a deep voice, and he works behind the scenes, and he keeps us on track. He's our executive producer. And thank you for my co-presenters for joining me tonight. I don't know what I'd do without you. You know, you're my co-banterers. Next week's show is going to be by Steve, I believe. And would you tell us about our show, please, for next week?
Yes, we have a wonderful psychic medium, Donna Fitzgerald, joining us. And we'll be talking specifically about physical mediumship, which is one of my favorite subjects. So it will be very interesting.
A little teaser on that, Steve. What is the physical mediumship aspect of it?
Well, we'll be talking quite a lot about trance mediumship, when the medium goes into deep trance and allows spirit to speak directly through the medium's voice box. We'll also be talking about apparitions and physical manifestations of spirit.
Phenomenal. Great. Well, you can find Steve, as in Steve, on our site. We have Stephen Lewis. He is on our site. And we have Maureen, and we have Carmen Miro. Maureen, I'm not sure if you had a last name like the second or third or junior.
Yeah, no, I don't. I have a last name, my same name I've had since birth, Hollerin. You're funny.
But, okay, and then Maureen Senior will for next week. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening, participating, being in the chat room. Thanks to our hosts and also the internet in general. Yay! For behaving. And we look forward to seeing you guys next week, same time, with Steve's program. Thank you. Have a great night. And be good and feel that and express that anger, but be nice about it. Bye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.